Since we started Ordinary Time, at least five occasions in the readings, we hear references to unclean spirits or demons. They showed up in last week's gospel reading, and they're here this week as well. So I thought, well, why don't we talk about them? What are they, and what is their purpose? What do they do? So demons are a type of angel. When we look at creation, there's the material world that's around us, but then there's the living world. It's divided into two categories. We have the spiritual world, which are the angels, and then we have the corporeal world, the animals, humans and all the other things that run around the earth. Now, angels, although they are purely spiritual beings, have intelligence. They're individual demons, and they're immortal creatures. Their function was to be a servant of God. In fact, their name means messenger. But something happened. We're told in sacred scripture that they rebel. Revelation 12 says that Satan rebels against God, and a third of the angels rebel with him, and they are cast out of heaven. So these rebellious angels are called demons, and their leader is Satan. Now, because the demons will not serve, they now have given themselves a new purpose. Their purpose is to drive as many people away from God. They won't serve God, so they don't want others to serve God as well. And this is accomplished in a few ways. The first is possession. Yes, it sells lots of books. Yes, it sells lots of movie tickets. But Father Gabriel Amorth, the head exorcist in the church in Rome, said that while it does happen, it is uncommon. The next level we would have is oppression or obsession. We see that people suffer psychological or spiritual assaults, either as persons or even think about haunted houses, which does in fact happen. Finally, there's temptation, which we all experience every day of our lives. If you think about it, if a devil were to manifest himself to you right in front of you, it would scare the daylights out of you. And you'd probably scream out to God for help and run to the nearest church. Well, that's the last thing that a demon wants to have happen. So temptation is more subtle. It's more behind the scenes. It's in the shadows. So through temptation, the devil and demons want to drive that wedge between us and God, between us and the people who we should love in our lives, through influencing our thoughts and our actions. Influencing, not demanding that we do anything. So when I was preparing this homily, a song from my wayward youth came to mind that addresses this situation perfectly. The song is called Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones. Anyone? All right, got some hippies here. Good. Now, I went back and read the lyrics through the theological lens that I was giving as a Dominican, and the lyrics are actually quite frightening. They're quite dark, and they capture the essence of evil. So the song starts out, "Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for long, long years, stole many a man's soul and faith." Mick Jagger, I guess I should call him Sir Mick Jagger, the Queen did knight him, is quite the theologian. In 31 words, he captures the essence of the devil. He says that the devil is personal, powerful, immortal, and on a mission. The rest of the song shows how at various parts of history, evil reared its ugly head, and people were put into a place where they had to make a decision, and they chose the wrong path. So I'd like to unpack some of those today. The next verse states, "I was round when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain, made damn sure that Pilate washed his hands and sealed his fate." Pilate was very conflicted. He knew that Jesus Christ was innocent. You know how he knew that? His wife told him. Claudius said, "He's innocent. I've had dreams. Don't do anything to this man." And at first he said, well, there has to be a way out of this. So he tries to scourge him. He tries to beat him. He says, look, I've done enough to him. Let him go. No. Then he says, look, you got Barabbas and you got this other guy. Who do you want? Thinking they'll take Barabbas. No, we want Barabbas. Take care of this other guy. Finally, Pilate is in a horrible position. Because of all the unrest that's going on, the Romans were out for him. They said, if you can't keep peace in the land, then we will bring somebody else in to do it. So Pilate was looking at losing his job and most likely losing his head at the same time. So at two other places in the gospel, we're given the lie that Pilate would give into. That lie says that it is better for one man to die than the nation. So if Pilate killed off an innocent, itinerant Jew, who cares? The Romans were infamous for putting tons of people to death. Who cares? He's a nobody, a loser. He's a Jew. We're Romans. We're strong. But Pilate, his conscience bothers him even to the very end. He says, I washed the blood from my hands. He can't do that because Pilate had the ability to do the right thing, to free this innocent man, but he chose not to. He chose evil. This logic is still with us today. Last week, Father Corin preached on the euthanasia movement, and it's starting to spread and splinter and do all kinds of things. And today, even in our assembly, we have a bill going through the right to die movement is growing. And the tenets sound very appealing to Americans. Individualism, you know, freedom. No one can tell us what to do. I want to die when I want to die, how I want to die, and on the day I want to die. Well, the right to die movement around the world, because we're a little behind the times, is now morphing, and it's becoming the duty to die. So you're all getting homework. I want you all to go home and Google duty to die and start reading all the articles. Listen to both sides of the argument. Really get through the rhetoric, get through the flowery stuff, and go and listen to the actual arguments that both sides of this issue are making. Then look at what's going on in Europe. Europe's way ahead of us in the euthanasia movement. The euthanasia movement intellectually started here in the university system in the United States, but we rebelled against and said, no way. So it's gone off to Europe and has been implemented, but now it's starting to come back. When you go and start reading about the duty to die, you're going to see that this right to die is really not there. People are being forced to do all kinds of things against their will. Now, I understand there's a time when we all have to say, we've done everything we can for whoever that person is, and now it's time to let nature take its course. I get that. I've been in situations where, you know, you go visit someone in the hospital and there's more machines than I have hairs on my head, and I think, who are these machines for? Not the patient. They're for the family, because the family can't accept that their loved one is going to die. So they're desperately trying to keep this person alive. That's not right either. Death is part of life. There comes a time we have to say, yes, we let our loved ones go, but we let them go. We don't bring about their departure. The song continues. I stuck around St. Petersburg when I saw it was time for a change. Killed the Tsar and his ministers. Anastasia screamed in vain. The Bolshevik Revolution would usher in communism. And one of its tenets is the rejection and outright destruction of faith and religion. This ideology professes that we can have a utopia right here. We can have heaven on earth right here, so don't worry about this pie in the sky stuff. If we put the right people in place, if we have the right laws, the right economic situation, we will all get together and love one another. This is why religion was called the opiate of the masses. Well, to date, not one of these earthly utopians has succeeded. Just because you deny the original sin, just because you deny evil, just because you deny the need for redemption, it doesn't mean it goes away. Pope Emeritus Benedict critiqued Marxism when he wrote in his encyclical Spe Salve. He said, Marx, quote, forgets man's freedom. He forgot that freedom always remains also freedom for evil. He thought that once the economy had been put right, everything would automatically be put right. Marx's real error is materialism. Man, in fact, is not merely a product of economic conditions, and it is not possible to redeem him purely from the outside by creating favorable economic environment. So again, ignoring the reality of our need for God, ignoring the reality that there is evil in the world, doesn't make it go away. It just creates a vacuum and just waits to invite trouble. Another verse states, I watched in glee while your kings and queens fought for 10 decades for the gods they made. This reference is to the 100-year war between England and France. And throughout that century, they pulled all other kinds of nations into their wars. Now, the devil loves wars. Yes, there's the saying, there are no atheists in a foxhole. And some during war will turn to God. But others will question God. How can an all-loving, how can an all-knowing God allow this to happen? But remember what the lyric said. They fought for the gods they made. When you go back and look at all the causes there, it wasn't religion. It was all other kind of political, economic realities that people were fighting over. Others, when faced with death, will become desperate, will lose hope, and act out in the most brutal and vicious ways. Just read the headlines of what's going around our world. Look at the brutality that we are inflicting upon one another. This is why anybody who's experienced war will say, war is hell. A final example is a verse that states, which is very timely for today, just as every cop is a criminal, and all you sinner saints, as heads as tails, just call me Lucifer, because I'm in need of some restraint. So we've had some shootings recently where police officers in the line of duty have used deadly force, and a number of young men have been killed. I wasn't there. I haven't had time to read all the transcripts. I'm not going to retry those cases. But what I found frightening was that in New York City, people marched in protest down the street, which is wonderful. We have the freedom of speech. But what they were saying was frightening. They were saying, what do we want, dead cops? When do we want it now? A week later, two police officers were gunned down, execution style, as they sat in their cars. I have childhood friends who are New York City police officers, so I take it a little bit personally. So even if those police officers acted wrong, it doesn't justify killing an innocent person 100 miles away who's trying to serve the very people that would kill them. But that's what evil wants. Make good bad and bad good. In between the verses, there's a refrain. It says, pleased to meet you. Hope you guessed my name. What's puzzling you is the nature of my game. Evil is very puzzling. We are God's children. We are good. We are all assumed that people are good. We have to teach our little ones that not everybody is good. Don't talk to strangers. We have that inherent goodness that we all want. We long for it. We say yes. So when we're faced with evil, it should trouble us. It should be difficult to wrap our minds around something that just wants evil for the sake of evil. So to address that, we got to leave the Rolling Stones and go to Batman for a minute. I was talking to a friend of mine about this, and he explained that I didn't see the movie. It's called The Dark Knight. And in it, the Joker's there. And the scene that he uses is the Joker had finally gotten all the money he wanted for extorting whatever he was trying to do. So the bad guys brought to the Joker, whatever it is, gave him a big pile of money. And as they're leaving, the Joker is seen lighting all the money on fire and just laughing like a maniac. And even the other bad guys are like, what's up with that? But that's the Joker. The Joker doesn't care. The Joker doesn't want anything. He just wants chaos. He just wants evil. He laughs in the face of anything. And that's the devil. The devil knows his time is limited. He knows that Christ on the cross has freed us from sin and death. He knows the clock is ticking until the second coming. So the only benefit he gets is misery loves company. He wants as many people to join him in bringing about death and destruction and chaos. Now the song concludes, if you meet me, have some courtesy, have some sympathy, have some taste. Use all your well-learned policies, or I'll lay your soul to waste. Ah, the classic lie, the classic liar. Jesus Christ says Satan is the father of lies, and this is it right here. Satan can't lay our souls to waste. He can tempt us, but he can't force us. We have God in our lives. We have grace in our lives. We have people in our lives to build us up, to help us to say no to temptation, to help us continue to walk on the path of good and righteousness. Today's gospel and many places in the scripture show us Christ has triumphed. He silences the demons. He drives them out. He sends them into the lake of fire. We have nothing to fear if we stay close to God, if we stay close to each other, if we build each other up in love and in grace and all those wonderful gifts that we're given at our baptisms and the other sacraments that we receive. So every day we have to repeat what these young people will say in 2 weeks. They will say that they will reject the devil and all his empty promises. May we do that every day of our lives.